Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And welcome to the Billboard Sharpie Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
Picking up where we left off last week, starting our four-part countdown last week of the 100 biggest Hot 100 hits of all time, celebrating everything. 60th anniversary for the Billboard Hot 100, August 4th, 1958. Is when it started. So for the first time ever, we're actually presenting the top 600 songs in the chart's history. That's on billboard.com. Top 100 artists of all time, all these other features. And here on the podcast, we're looking at the top 100 songs specifically, going week by week for 4 weeks, counting down from number 100 to number one.
Well, no matter what your sonic preference is, we are sure to have it today on the podcast, going through another 25 songs, counting from number 75 to 51. We'll get to the halfway mark of the top 100 songs on the Hot 100 all time. Remember last time we counted the from 100 down to 76. That took us from Waiting for a Girl Like You by Foreigner all the way to Ebony and Ivory by Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder. And are you ready, Gary, to dive right back in? We'll start with something actually very contemporary and jump around for a couple decades. Here we go. Number 75 through 71 to kick us off today of the top Hot 100 songs of all time.
All right, number 75 through 71 on the Billboard Hot 100's top 100 songs of all time, the first 60 years of the chart dating to its 1958 debut. Back at number 75, Moves Like Jagger, Maroon 5, featuring Christina Aguilera, number one, 2011, a real, not even just a comeback of sorts for Maroon 5, but sort of kicked off an even greater level in their career. They'd been obviously big for the early part of the 2000s, but by the end of the decade, they're kind of at a good level, but not anywhere near the level they've been in the 2010s. And this was the one that really did it. It was more of a disco-leaning sound in some ways, and really signals Maroon 5 moving from what had been kind of a rock-based pop band to just all-out pop this decade. Number 74. It's always funny when I try to say these words. Whoomp. There it is. Exclamation point. Did I say it right?
Yeah, I don't know if that had a whole lot of energy behind it. We're going to need to take two on. We're going to need to take two on that.
Whoomp. There it is.
Whoomp. Whoomp. What do y'all think about that? Whoomp.
Tag team. I'd say that. Name of the act. I know there were remakes of it pretty much right after that. One was an Adams Family version by Tag Team as well, and maybe the way I just said it was closer to, there was a Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse and a Goofy version for a Disney compilation as well. Maybe I was doing the Mickey Mouse version.
Yeah, there we go. Disney always trying to be in the zeitgeist, trying to always, you know, connect with the kids. Had a Mickey Unwrapped album, yeah, in the early 90s. Some covers, some parody kind of things, and of course, whoop, there it is. Whoop. There it is.
That's how you
was
say it.
So, yeah, that's how you guys say it. You know, so hot at the time that, of course, Disney jumped on. So I guess that's one way to know that you got a pretty big hit is when, you know, like, I guess nowadays maybe it's like the Kids Bop Kids, but maybe back then that was Disney trying to do that cover.
Also, that was one of two songs we'll hear in these 25 songs this week that didn't go to number one. It was number two hit in 1993.
Yeah, if you want to blame the songs that kept that out of number one, your targets are Mariah Carey with the song Dream Lover, and before that, UB40, Can't Help Falling in Love.
Number 73, Aquarius, Let the Sunshine In by Fifth Dimension. It was a medley of two songs from here. Got number one in 1969. I Love Rock and Roll, number 72, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Number one for 7 weeks in 1982. You know what I think of when I think of that song is... blocked, talking about songs that didn't get to number one, got to number two. We Got the Beat by the Go-Go's. Peaked at number two for 3 weeks. Couldn't get past I Love Rock and Roll. Number 71, Because I Love You, the Postman song from Stevie B. Number one hit in 1990. This is what's kind of interesting is Stevie B is in this sort of a rare class of artists, I guess, who their biggest hit isn't really representative of their entire sound. This was a ballad. Up until that point, he never had a top 10 hit. He'd put out all up-tempo dance freestyle songs. He's a real leader of the freestyle sound in the late 80s, Cover Girls, so those kind of acts. And this song just kind of came out of nowhere. It was very different, maybe a little bit more mainstream because it was a ballad, a huge number one for 4 weeks. But if you listen to his catalog, it's completely different. I was trying to think of other acts who their biggest hit really isn't representative of their entire sound. I was thinking maybe The Cure, Love Song, which is really kind of a ballad compared to most of their other catalog doesn't really match that. Maybe kind of a more obscure example, Bobby McFerrin, Don't Worry, Be Happy, isn't really, he does a lot of a cappella stuff like that, but nothing that really sounds like that. He apparently doesn't even do that song in concert anymore. It just doesn't feel like it's really a part of his main sound. So sometimes bands and acts break through like that. A lot of hair bands in the late 80s, early 90s too, they might have a huge hit with a ballad, Extreme, with More Than Words, but if you buy the whole album, it's probably not going to sound like that. So sometimes it's really based on the sound of a song that just happens to work, and maybe that's why they do something a little bit more mainstream that just kind of cuts through. Actually, I'm such a Stevie B fan, Trevor. I think we need to dig into Stevie B's catalog. Here's how some other songs he has, not Because I Love You sound. Come on.
I wanna live.
So Stevie B on the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. All right, moving on from number 70, number 66 coming up as we count down the 100 biggest songs of all time in the Billboard Hot 100's history on the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast.
He's mine.
I'm all about that bass, by that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, by that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, by that bass. Hey, I'm bringing booty back.
Your soft, fuzzy sweaters, too magical to touch. To see her in that negligee is really just too much. My blood runs cold.
Yeah,
my memory has just been sold.
My angel in the centerfold.
And that was number 70 through 66, counting down the top 100 hits on the Hot 100 all time. At number 70, you guys heard The Boy Is Mine, Brandy and Monica. Funny enough, in the year that would finally give us the Whitney-Mariah duet that many people hoped for, thought could happen, maybe wondered, the biggest female collaboration of the year belongs to sort of the next generation superstars, Brandy and Monica, uniting for the number one hit lasting 13 weeks in the summer of 1998. If you grew up in my generation, you know this song very, very well. I don't know. I mean, I guess obviously because it was a monster hit in the summer. I think I was like 7, 8 at the time. So it was one of like the, it was one of the first songs that I think, like, I guess I can remember being like inescapably big. You heard it on the radio all the time. You heard it like it when it lasted when you got back to school. Of course, it was just like, I don't know, some sort of fun, silly song. In particular, one of the cool things about this song, also in terms of its chart legacy, is oddly enough, for as much as I think, you know, we love our divas and our women chart stars, a lot of female collaborations do not make it to number one on the Hot 100. The Boy Is Mine is actually only the second time in 1998, so the Hot 100 around for just about 40 years at that point. Only the second time at the time that a collaboration between two female solo stars hit number one. And it's only happened one more time since that female solo artists have gotten together and made a number one hit. We're going to pass it to my friend Gary, who's going to, let's see if he knows.
No More Tears, Enough Is Enough.
I didn't even get to answer the question.
I don't need the whole question.
But that was, okay, yeah. So the first time that we ever had a female collaboration at number one is going to be Barbra Streisand, Donna Summer, No More Tears, Enough Is Enough, in 1979. So almost 20 years before The Boy Is Mine, and almost 20 years, past 20 years into the Hot 100's existence. But do you know after 1998, the most recent time that any female soloist got together and made a number one hit?
Lady Marmalade, 2001.
Of course, yeah. So we had No More Tears and The Boy Is Mine, both duets. But Lady Marmalade, the remake in 2001 with Christina Aguilera, Pink, Maya, and Lil' Kim. We have not had any collaboration between female singers make it to number one since. Some people thinking we've gotten close, of course. You know, you could look at Bang Bang, Jessie J, Ariana Grande,
right,
with Nicki that got to number three a few years back. We've had Beautiful Liar, Shakira, Beyonce also getting to number three. So kind of an interesting sort of chart phenomenon. We've seen so many male-male duets make it that the women-women duets don't quite get there.
Telephone as well.
Telephone also, right. Another number three. I guess three is the magic number for these duets. But yeah, Lady Gaga, Beyonce, also one of the big examples from this decade. Not of course that doesn't say anything about the quality of the songs. They hold up just as well as any other ones. But just in terms of a chart stat, kind of funny that only three times we've seen women get together and make a number one hit. All right, number 69, right above Boy Is Mine. We got Royals by Lorde from 2013. Debut smash out of the gate for her, really bringing her huge worldwide fame. Number one for 9 weeks in the fourth quarter of 2013. Number 68, we got Just Like Starting Over, John Lennon. Number one hit right at the end of 1980. Of course, 1980, year of infamy for Lennon fans. The song Just Like Starting Over hitting number one just a few weeks after he was murdered here in New York City. And one of the rare times that we've seen a posthumous number one from an artist. But actually, you know, John Lennon, Just Like Starting Over, kind of back in the discussion this year, because in 2018, we saw another act have a posthumous number one in XXXTentacion and his song Sad, which hit number one on the Hot 100 just after he was murdered in June. At number 67, we've got All About That Bass by Meghan Trainor. I feel kind of guilty doing this because for those who don't know, running joke around the office is that Gary is the world's biggest Meghan Trainor fan, because Meghan and Gary, we've had some correspondence. She's been up at the office. She wanted to give Gary a shout out at the Billboard Music Awards when she won an award one year, but she forgot. So she told people after the show she meant to shout out Gary. So what is the Trainor trust relationship? Let's get that aired out.
Remember last week I was giving a couple examples of brushes with fame where I almost talked to Carly Simon, met very quickly Paul Abdul. Meghan Trainor went much better. So no, what it comes down to is 2014, All About That Bass hit the Hot 100, debuted. So wrote a little story about how the song debuted and reached out through the record label. And she was just so excited that Billboard was interviewing her, because it was her first interview with Billboard. She couldn't believe she was on the Hot 100. We just had a really nice conversation. She was really, really fun, really happy about it. She is from Nantucket. I worked on Martha's Vineyard before that, so I have a Massachusetts connection. So a little New England kind of a thing going on there. But it was just really fun to see her charting and all the success she's had since. So it's about the history we have. It's not really much more anything juicier than that.
But you did meet her once.
At her show, her father. Her father's name's Gary too, so he's a Gary T. So yeah, a little connection
Gary
there as well.
T. Can
the Gary T. Club
make it stop? Make it stop. Also, really might get lost in the shuffle since we're just a few years removed from it right now. But I think sort of pop historians will have to remember that, you know, the early 2010s, a big time for, you know, positive songs, self-empowerment, self-love songs, All About That Bass, definitely right in that category. Also with things like Born This Way, Firework, Katy Perry, even Shake It Off, Taylor Swift. So definitely one of the big lasting hallmarks is how big a song that was in an era that was all about embracing that sort of message. And wrapping us up, number 66. If you love songs with hidden messages, we got a good one for you. Centerfold by the J. Giles Band. Number one hit in 1982. I feel like people always are a little bit surprised when they like sort of sit down and dissect the storyline behind this. Maybe because like we live in a world where like there aren't magazines a whole lot anymore, and people don't have physical products like your angel from your high school homeroom is now the centerfold in a girly magazine. What could that mean, Gary? Can you shed some light on this for us?
I was in second grade at the time, so I'm going to not say anything at all about that.
Okay, well, if you don't know, I guess go to Genius and look up the lyrics and figure it out. But, of course, Centerfold, big hit for the J. Giles Band, and makes the cut at 66 on the all-time list. All right, we're going to keep going. Counting down numbers 65 through 61. Once again, here we go, the top Hot 100 hits of all time.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Way over time, that digs on me. You kill me, mama.
Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke. Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke. Get down, girl, gon' head, get down. Get down, girl, gon' head, get down.
Oh, then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a train hooked out in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. Yes, I saw her face. Now I'm a believer.
Start till I walk in.
Don't stop, make it pop. DJ gonna speak us up tonight. I'ma fight till we see the sunlight. Tick tock on the clock, but the party don't stop. No,
numbers 65 through 61 on the Billboard Hot 100's top 100 songs of all time. We're counting them down here on the podcast over 4 weeks, four batches of 25 at a time. Number 65, The Sign from Ace of Base, kind of really foreshadowed that pretty much the last 20, 25 years or so, Swedish pop has become so huge on the charts. Right after Ace of Base, all the Max Martin hits, Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, Britney, it all started coming along after that. But Ace of Base, a little bit before that, and you know, other acts too, obviously ABBA, Roxette, and remember, Trevor, we had Per Gessle from Roxette on the podcast a few weeks ago, and we talked about Swedish pop and why it's so melodic over the years, and so it feels like that's always a question, but I never really heard the answer, and I thought Per Gessle really had a good take where he said Swedish folk music is actually very melodic over the years, so people who grew up with that, they went pop, they would take that penchant for melody, and very few countries have done that better than Swedish acts. Number 64, Timbaland featuring One Republic with Apologize. That's the other song in these 25 songs that didn't go to number one, but still big enough to be in this list. Got to number two in 2007. Kind of interesting. I feel like a lot of people wouldn't maybe realize it's Timbaland featuring One Republic, because you hear it, and you hear Timbaland's influence in the song, but it's just... it's basically a One Republic song.
Yes, I'm sure there were some contract negotiations that made this possible. I mean, this was on his own Shock Value album, which also had the song Give It To Me with Justin Timberlake and Nelly Furtado, both of whom in 2006 had massive years thanks to their Timbaland produced hits. Timberlake, you know, was that was Future Sex Love Sound year with Sexy Back, My Love, What Goes Around Comes Around. Nelly Furtado really having a big pop breakthrough. Some people thought she might have sold out even a little bit, but that was the year that Promiscuous and Maneater, Say It Right, on that Loose album. So Timbaland was really the top dog, and I assume, you know, One Republic kind of knew that and knew with his help they could get a massive hit, which they did. So maybe giving up the lead credit was worth it in the long run.
Yeah, and if you hear the One Republic version on their own, it just doesn't have that same kick to it. Timbaland really did punch it up, and it's kind of hard to imagine that maybe it wouldn't have ever really been a hit without his involvement. So total credit to him for earning that lead credit on that song. Number 63, Gold Digger, Kanye West featuring Jamie Foxx.
It almost feels like no other musical legend will be quite as paired with Jamie Foxx as Ray Charles. Of course, he was Ray Charles in the movie.
Right.
Just the year before, had won the Oscar at the top of 2005, so that was still very fresh on people's minds. So, you know, they kind of rode that Ray connection in a lot of ways. I mean, straight to the top of the charts. Of course, Lambs will lament this song because it knocked We Belong Together out of number one and single-handedly kept Shake It Off from getting to number one. So I feel like maybe, I don't know, Gary, as a Lamb, do you have a little bitter taste in your mouth when you hear about Gold Digger for all the chart history it denied Mariah?
I was just thinking how Lambs lost out to a fox.
That's right. The fox got the Lambs. Let's go.
A hunting trip atop the Hot 100.
Thank God Gary was not writing the headlines back then or any of the copy, because he would have just, I mean, this would have been the Fox, the Hound, and every other Disney story wrapped up in one.
Fox, Hounds, Lambs on the chart.
All right, at 62.
Well, now it's just writing itself because it's the Monkees. That wasn't planned.
Who is this guy, you know? Where do they get him from?
I'm a Believer at number 62. The Monkees, number one in 1966, written by Neil Diamond. I actually spoke to one of the Monkees earlier on the Billboard Sharpie podcast. We had Mickey Dolenz on from the Monkees, looking back at just their entire history, just an amazing way they came onto the charts just out of nowhere with the TV show, obviously. But you can have a TV show. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to have all these hit songs. But obviously having Neil Diamond as a writer on multiple hits of theirs and just all-time classics from I'm a Believer, Daydream Believer, all the hits they came out with in 66, 67. And they just were number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart for months. And number one's in the Hot 100. So just really one of the biggest acts in 66 into 67. So Mickey Dolenz talked about what it was like being a Monkee at the height of their success in the late 60s.
So much happens so fast, you know.
Right.
It's like being in the eye of a hurricane. You just can't absorb anything more, you know. You get that kind of deer caught in the headlights kind of look.
Right. What did you enjoy most about it? It sounds like everything was a whirlwind, and maybe it was just all one big blur for the most part, but did you like making the TV show more, the acting? Did you like going in at night and recording the vocals, or did you love all of it?
Well, I liked all of it. I mean, it was incredibly exciting, and, you know, I approached it as an entertainer. I knew that it was going to require singing and playing, because at the audition you had to be able to sing and play an instrument to get in the audition,
right,
to get through the auditions. And my audition piece, for example, was Johnny B. Goode, because I played acoustic guitar and started with classical guitar, you know, Segovia kind of stuff, and as a kid, and then morphed into folk music in the early 60s, and then that morphed into rock and roll. And like I say, I knew the show was more than just about acting, but I was a singer. My parents were both singers. They were both in the business. So, you know, I can't say I liked one bit more than the other. I would say I was probably more comfortable on the television set because I'd already done it. I'd already had a TV series as a kid called Circus Boy.
Right, right.
And the same studio, in fact, and shot parts of it in the same soundstage.
Yeah.
When I showed up on the at Columbia Screen Gems lot, you know, to start working on the series, it was the same guy at the gate that had 10 years earlier known me as Mickey Braddock and Circus Boy. So I was probably more comfortable just because I was familiar with it,
right?
The process. And I was not as familiar with the process of recording yet. But I do remember liking it all. I mean, how can you not when you're selling all those records and you're getting that incredible reaction?
Mickey Dolenz, The Monkees on the Billboard Sharpie podcast, looking back at I'm a Believer and all their hits. And I feel like even if you grew up long after The Monkees were originally on TV, everyone probably knows about them because through reruns and being online, it's really kind of a goofy, weird humor that they had on that show. But I think they're still beloved all these years later, both for the music and for the show. Wrapping things up in those five songs, Kesha, the one that got it all started for TikTok in 2010, has the distinction of being the first number one hit of the 2010s. So January 2nd, 2010, the chart was dated. Kesha got to number one for 9 weeks with her debut hit. We're almost at the end of the decade already, Trevor, which seems kind of crazy. Is Drake going to have the last number one of the 2010s? Can we pencil that in at this point?
I'm sure a lot of people might think that. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just 1 week. It could be anybody's game. Stay tuned to Billboard.com for the next 2 years and you'll find out.
All right, moving on to number 60 through number 56, the biggest hits of all time in the Hot 100's first 60 years.
Lady, I'm your knight in shining armor and I love you. You have made me what I am and I am yours. Make me your selection. Show you the way love's supposed to be. Baby, you should let me love you. Love you, love you, love you.
Right, we are up to the top 60 for the 60th anniversary of the Hot 100, counting down the biggest hits to ever make the chart. Coming in at number 60, we've got the song Lady by Kenny Rogers. Some people may not know this song actually written and produced by whom, Gary?
Your buddy, Lionel Richie.
My buddy, Lionel Richie. Yeah, Lionel, of course, the former frontman of the Commodores, got a call to write some material for Kenny. This is right around the same time, pretty soon, he's writing Endless Love, starting his own solo work, so a lot to juggle. So Lionel and Kenny, very good friends, and obviously very successful collaborators. A number one hit for Kenny in 1980. Kenny's going to be number one again a couple years after that with Islands in the Stream with Dolly Parton. So a phenomenon that we don't see too much of today, but nice to see, of course, some country representation on this list.
And Lionel Richie, who you spoke to previously on the podcast, we're going to hear from him coming up because he's got more music coming up. We already heard two songs by him previously. But, you know, I will say, too, when I heard this song come up when Sirius XM was playing number ones, I actually thought it was Lionel Richie at first because his imprint is just all over that song. It's so haunting. It feels like a Lionel Richie written ballad.
All right, number 59, Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. Really just one of those songs. What can you say? I mean, it's become so iconic that it's really transcended just about everything that it's been involved with. Of course, from Saturday Night Fever, massive movie that gave way to the soundtrack, which made the Bee Gees the undisputed kings of the disco movement. And, of course, Staying Alive, especially, you know, with the little disco move that everybody does with the finger point in the air. I mean, this song will live forever. Perhaps my favorite sort of chart nerd stat about this song is it actually was the first of four number one hits in a row that Barry Gibb who, of course, is one of the three Gibbs in the Bee Gees that he co-wrote. So Stayin' Alive was number one for 4 weeks, knocked out by the song Love is Thicker Than Water by the younger brother, Andy Gibb. So we're keeping it in the Gibb family. The older brother's Payin' Back, knock him out of number one after 2 weeks with the song Night Fever. And then after 8 weeks, the song If I Can't Have You by Yvonne Elliman, also from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, that becomes number one. So Barry Gibb for 15 straight weeks, co-writer on a number one hit. All right, at 58, we got Let Me Love You by Mario, another, again, if you grew up in that sweet spot, sort of millennial generation, classic R&B song, number one, 9 weeks at the top of 2005. Number 57, Blondie, Call Me. You know, sometimes one of those things where a movie can make a song and then somehow the movie kind of fades into the background. I feel like Call Me might be in that camp. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's from the movie American Gigolo starring Richard Gere, which I feel like is not held up nearly as well as the song Call Me has.
Yeah, I actually talked to Diane Warren earlier this year on the podcast. Same thing with Because You Love Me, a huge number one hit to this day, just a 90s classic. But Up Close and Personal, the movie, doesn't maybe quite hold up as well.
Not quite ringing, not quite ringing the bells. I think Celine probably got another movie shot a couple years later that is probably stood the test of time. But Blondie definitely wrote Call Me to huge success. 6 weeks at number one in 1980. And at 56, bringing it back to something younger listeners may know, Boom Boom Pow, Black Eyed Peas, number one for 12 weeks in 2009. And we're about a decade removed, really, from when Boom Boom Pow got to be number one. But what a year that set off for the Peas that I don't know if anybody really saw coming. Boom Boom Pow, 12 weeks at number one, was knocked out of the top spot by their own song, I Got a Feeling, 14 weeks at number one. We're going to see I Got a Feeling coming up later on this countdown. But 26 consecutive weeks at number one for the Black Eyed Peas in 2009. That is something no artist had ever done before and no one has done since.
Yeah, I think you look back, it might seem a little surprising for people who just look back and go through chart history and see, wow, the Black Eyed Peas were the biggest thing in 2009. Maybe because they just never really followed it up with anything after that on really any kind of level. Fergie took a long break after that. So they hit this huge high and just kind of let that be their moment.
Yeah, and it seems like, of course, with Fergie not officially part of the Peas anymore, them moving back into sort of the direction that they were in before they really got, huge in the mid-2000s and certainly by the late 2000s, maybe the last, commercial stand for the Black Eyed Peas. But yeah, like Gary said, I mean, it's one of those things where when you look back and if you grew up in that time, you'll hear that song and you'll be like, oh, whoa, I almost forgot the Peas used to be everywhere. And certainly they're going to be on this list a couple times. Some of the biggest Hot 100 hits we've ever seen.
I guess with that lyric, too. So 2000 and late sort of times it a little bit to its era, too.
Who let Gary on this mic? So, I'm telling you.
Did I say that better than I said whoomp earlier?
I'll give that to you.
Yeah, getting better.
All right, so 12 weeks number one for the Black Eyed Peas. We're going to see a lot more members of the Double Digit Club coming up just now. The last five songs to bring us to the halfway point on the countdown of the top 100 hits on the Hot 100 of all time, numbers 55 through 51. Check them out.
the sunset when the rain set in. And your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever grew.
And that's why I'm okay.
Numbers 55 through 51, the biggest Hot 100 hits, the top 100 all-time in the chart's 60th anniversary, celebrating, I would say, two of the most enduring hits ever in the Hot 100's history in these five songs. Back at number 55, End of the Road by Boyz II Men, 13 weeks at number one in 1992. So a record at that point beat two songs that had 10 weeks at number one each. You Light Up My Life, Debbie Boone in 1977, and then Physical, Olivia Newton-John in 1981. So right past that, 13 weeks. But it's actually kind of funny how this works out, Trevor. Didn't hold the record for too long because the song at number 54 would then break it. 14 weeks for Whitney Houston, I'll Always Love You.
Funny how that works out, that you know, it takes all this time to break a record, and then Whitney says, I'll break it too.
Well, not a complete coincidence. The chart had changed methodology at that point. Nielsen data had become part of the chart at that point, so we started seeing longer reigns at number one, and even Whitney's record wouldn't last for too long, because One Sweet Day would come along for 16 weeks at number one, and Despacito has since tied that. So it's kind of been handed off a little bit. But yeah, one of the most enduring hits, really, in the rock era. Because it's had so many hit versions. So Dolly Parton had a hit with it in 1974, again in 1982. Whitney brought it back in 1992. And Dolly again even had another version in 1995 with Vince Gill. So it's had these multiple runs. It's just never gone away and just always seems to come back. Came back again a couple years ago in the Forever Country medley as well. That was really the basis of that song. That was a number one country hit. So just really just a total classic going on 40-something years at this point. And we got to talk to Clive Davis about it on the podcast last year. So it was really cool to talk to just a complete icon of the music business. Clive, part of the Bodyguard soundtrack, helming that, getting the songs he wanted on there with Whitney and making it one of the biggest albums of all time and making this one of the biggest hits of all time. We had him, again, on the podcast last year. Clive Davis talking about Whitney Houston, the Bodyguard era, on the Billboard Chappie podcast.
David Foster and Linda Thompson, his wife at the time, wrote I Have Nothing. I came up and submitted Run to You. And lurking in the background was always the question of what song would be in the climactic airport scene. And it really was Kevin, Kevin Costner, who made the suggestion of I Will Always Love You. And really, he made the suggestion with simultaneous contact with David Foster, with Whitney, and with myself. And all three of us, without consultation with the other, but all three of us responded unanimously that it was a great idea. And that's how I Will Always Love You got in the film.
Obviously, the song fits perfectly in term with the movie. Was there any apprehension on anybody's part, whether yours or Whitney's, about turning what was a country song that people knew so well into this huge pop and R&B ballad? It has a 45-second a cappella intro, which may have been a tough sell at radio. Was anybody worried about how it would work outside of the film?
You know, I'll never forget the first time I heard it. It without question, sent chills up and down me. Now, it sounds cliche, but the answer is that's what happened. And you get that spine tingle, you get that reaction, and you just say, wow. And I heard it, I loved it. And then in a succession, David added instrumentation to it, sweetened it, and kept sending new mixes and versions of the song, each of which I said, you know, it's not as strong as that first one. And obviously you got to really guard against getting what they call demo-itis, falling in love with that first rough cut or that demo, you know. But I just kept listening and saying, it's a little slick, this instrumentation. It doesn't capture the rawness of the emotion which made that first cut so very special. So we kept having this dialogue. And then one day, Warner Brothers called me and they said, look, you're past the deadline. You've chosen this. This is the first single. The movie's opening. You literally have, you know, hours to decide. You got to come with that single. That's our contract. And I decided to release that very first cut. And there was a very heated exchange initially, that first time when David learned that I had decided to go with that first cut. And as I say, he called me every obscenity that one could ever imagine hearing. But I must say, within 24 hours, he called me up and he said, my God, I'm getting calls like I've never gotten. People are, they're driving to the side of the road. They can't even continue writing normally and hearing the record on the radio. And he said, okay. He was really wonderfully appreciative.
Clive Davis on the Billboard Charity Podcast talking Whitney Houston and I Will Always Love You. Also in those five songs we just heard, No One, Alicia Keys, her third number one hit after her debut hit Fallen in 2001, and then My Boo in 2004, 2007 for No One. Number 52, that's the other song I was saying, these enduring hits, just songs that always seem to come back throughout the rock era. Candle in the Wind, 1997, with Something About the Way You Look Tonight, Elton John. It's a double-sided single back when physical singles could have two sides, the A and B side.
But the way it had to come back.
It's obviously a sad reason why. So originally, 1973, Elton John's song was about Marilyn Monroe, became a live top 10 hit 1987 for Elton. And then 10 years later, it was back, sadly, for the funeral of Princess Diana, his really good friend. And just incredible first week sales, a Nielsen era record, 3.4 million physical copies sold in that first week. Nothing has ever really come close to that since. But yeah, I would say that I Will Always Love You. There's in this short list of songs that multiple generations have known their own version of the song. And Ed Sheeran just covered the song for a new Elton John covers album that came out this year. So even to someone who's having some of the biggest hits today, they all know the song. They're all putting their own spin on it. So yeah, that I Will Always Love You. Numbers 52 and 54 right near each other. And wrapping up the first half of our countdown over these first 2 weeks, Blurred Lines, Robin Thicke featuring T.I. and Pharrell, Song of the Summer 5 years ago. It's kind of weird to say that was 5 years ago. It still feels like it's kind of a recent hit, maybe just against all these songs that are decades older.
Mm-mm.
You don't think so? Subject matter making a little bit dated?
You know, I kind of wonder, maybe this is a good one to end on. You know, we look back, obviously, at so many of these massive hits that were hits in their time. But for Blurred Lines, I wonder sort of what the long tail is going to be, because you see a lot of these songs, I Will Always Love You, Into the Road, Staying Alive, that, you know, way past their primes, once those sounds have expired, somehow those songs still endure. Blurred Lines, of course, you know, with the subject coming at a time where really social attitudes are starting to shift, it's kind of got the stain of the Marvin Gaye trial on it as well.
Right.
Kind of makes you wonder for a song that, you know, as you said, Song of the Summer in 2013, we were all vibing, feeling. 5 years later, is it almost taboo to, can you like Blurred Lines? Can you play Blurred Lines? It feels very, you know, kind of crazy how big it was at the time and maybe where it ends up in the grand scheme of history.
Yeah, I will say I've heard it even recently on AC Radio, which is maybe in some ways the last place you think you'd hear that. And it, you know, sonically, it feels like a good time, just a fun summertime song. And maybe that's all people hear when they hear it. I think everyone's, you know, this has been a discussion a lot with a lot of people in pop culture. Can you separate the artist from the art? In certain cases, that's a personal choice, I guess, for everybody. But, you know, that's what looking back at these songs do. This is how big they were at the time. That's why they're on this chart, because they were the biggest hits of their individual era. And then kind of put that against how maybe they feel nowadays. Some songs feel like not really quite relevant to today. Others still feel very in line with that. But that's what you get when you take 60 years and look at the top 100.
All right, we're through with the bottom 50. We'll be back with the top 50 next week. So join us for the third quarter of this countdown. We're going to go from numbers 50 to 26. If you are a fan of Adele, Justin Bieber perhaps, little Marvin Gaye, you'll want to tune in next week as we scale through some of those hits and hit all of those artists. So as always, thank you guys for listening. Be sure again to check out at billboard.com. We have a lot of supporting content around the 60th anniversary, a lot of breakout lists, the top 100 artist lists. If you want to cheat and get ahead and figure out who's number one on the all-time songs list, you can do that.
We'll take the clicks.
And to close us out this week, we want to give you one bonus track, not on the top 100 list, but just something for your listening pleasure. Gary has got this week's selection. Fire away.
Well, I feel like last week we started a trend, I guess, if one episode can be a trend, but we played a new song from Paul McCartney. So kind of nice to take all these artists on this chart with the past hits and see what they're doing now. So not out as long as Paul McCartney, but since we talked so much about Meghan Trainor before, she's rising on Billboard's pop songs chart right now with Let You Be Right. So let's have Meghan close things out here on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast this week.
Love me, love me. Don't forget you love me when I break things, make things a little bit uncomfy. Baby, don't hate me. You probably think I'm crazy and it's stupid and foolish the way we've been behaving. So don't keep dragging this on and on when you know that you're wrong. You're wrong. I don't wanna fight tonight. I'ma let you be right. I'ma let you be right. Let you be right. We can make up if you just kiss me at the next traffic light. I don't wanna fight tonight. I'ma let you be right. Let you be right. Oh, 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 oh.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.